Hola, hola, and welcome back. At some point in your life, you asked for it, so we got it. Your required dose of Señora Power. This is Sophia.
This is Sonia.
This is Gabby.
In this episode, we continue our conversation about establishment señoras. We learned all about how Lupe Anguiano used resources from the church, that is, the skills she learned as a nun and catechist, to benefit the community through the Teen Post program. If you don't remember what that is, you should probably go back and listen to that episode. Now, in this episode, we're going to flip the dynamics to share the story of a señora whose shoe-shining skills enabled her to implement some urgently needed change to Houston's Police Department, or HPD. We learn about how Miss Mamie Garcia took her señora skills all the way to the U.S. Department of Justice. As you can guess, this episode includes mention of police brutality towards people of color, from Joe Campos Torres to George Floyd, so please be advised, but let's go. Okay, so let's talk about the police. This is going to be a fun episode because we get to dispel a still prevailing narrative that continues to uphold the police system as a flawless, law-abiding, moral authority. Instead, we're going to invite ourselves and our listeners to dare to be critical of this establishment and of any establishment, really. And to listeners who might already be skeptical of the police system, we are going to invite you to consider the multiple ways in which, you know, individual dissent and criticism can be used for community building. This is also an extra special episode because your host got to sit down and chat with Señora Mamie Garcia, as well as her daughter CJ, who also has her own sort of Señora power going on, and we'll talk about that as well. Let me give you a little bit of background history on Mamie, a little bit of her bio, and we'll go over all of the many, many things that she's done throughout her life. So Mamie has been an active participant of Houston's Mexican-American community for more than 60 years. She doesn't just hold on to one title, but in her words, ultimately considers herself simply...
I don't want to hold on to one title or another title, but... from what I have been doing and what I am doing, I'm still a community person, a community leader.
This boils down to knowing people, knowing your community. She's definitely a fan of business cards. Luckily, we had ours with us to share with her. She was very impressed. But, you know, she says that this is how one develops relationships, how you know who's who and what certain people can do for the community, who to call on when you need them.
Anybody that I can learn about, contact, and I'll be very honest with you, I keep my eyes open. Oh, I need to get his card. I want to know who he is, you know. You know, because you're going to need, it's something that I feel that we always need to know, you know, who you are, what can you do, because somebody else might have a need of your help, so I pass it on.
The Garcia family moved from Laredo to Houston's Magnolia Park in 1955, when Mamie was only 15 years old. They lived in the Clayton homes, which were essentially low-income government housing, mostly for Mexican-American residents. As a teenager, she worked as a shoe shiner, but at night, she went to Durham Business College, where she became aware of all sorts of social norms around her. Not just, you know, learning the basics of business, but really the importance of knowing how to stand properly, the proper posture, how to speak to customers, how to type. You know, this is what in other episodes we've called respectability politics, or at least a part of it. Yet we know that respectability is a tool. Thanks to her education and her sociable skills, she held various administrative positions related to services for mostly low-income families in places like Jefferson Hospital and Ripley House. All of these jobs, she emphasized, required her to learn not only about the job itself, but also about outreach, the importance of basically knocking on people's doors and convincing them to let you help. This intimate knowledge of the community and her outreach skills were essential tools in her involvement with LULAC, which began in 1964. Mamie was not only a member, she also founded a new council, which is Council 402, within Houston's District 8. And we learned that Houston has two districts, District 8 and District 18. Mamie worked within District 8. But she essentially built this chapter by organizing fundraisers and building trust within community members. She says,
it takes, I guess, guts for me to be among all men and me, the only woman.
Yeah.
But I went ahead and got involved. And I have been involved in serving in many capacity, being the first woman president of Council 402. I was accepted the first woman. And then from there, I learned from other women, like in El Paso or California, you know, they had women.
The first time she ran, she lost by only one vote. And by her account, it's because LULAC was still a men's organization. Other members were essentially questioning why she didn't just stay home, raise her family, etc. All of the questions that were used and tired of hearing. After tireless organizing, though, and weekly trips to neighboring cities, mutual aid efforts, and all of these community-building activities, Mamie becomes the first woman to hold the position of deputy director in 1974. Because of all of the work that she did, because of all of her activism, she got a unanimous vote from District 8 members. So even though she was the first, she's certainly not the only woman participating in the establishment that is LULAC, a grassroots establishment, as CJ reminded us, but still a longstanding institution with plenty of resources. They mostly focus on education, providing scholarships for the community, these kinds of things. Mamie is part of both a network and a genealogy of señoras, as we learned during our interview. So keeping these networks and genealogies in mind, as we discuss this kind of criticism that she received, right? Why not just stay home and take care of the family? I guess the question that I'd like to discuss now is, why is it important for women, for Mexican-American women, for señoras, to be represented in the establishment, even when we're criticizing the establishment, right? So another way of thinking about this is, what are the benefits or the limitations of representation as a political strategy?
The reason why I personally think it's important is because even the question of representation, I mean, and it also depends what institution you're talking about, but generally, for example, if you're talking about political institutions or political organizations, they have to reflect their constituency. And in Texas specifically, Latinos are quickly becoming close to majority. So if the politicians of Texas, for example, or if political organizations, if, you know, identity affiliated organizations don't represent their entire constituency or supporter base, then that is a problem, because usually positions of, you know, political power or identity based organizations are made to advocate for the general populace. So if you're supposed to advocate for people, then if you don't understand their struggles, if you don't know where they're coming from, if you don't have a certain voice, then what is even the point? Like, you're not actually representing the people that you are representing, right? So in that way, I think that representation is really important. I think that representation is not where things end, though, because it can be kind of a red herring. Just because we have, for example, a Latina in politics, or a Latina as the head of the school board district or something like that, superintendent, etc., does not mean that we do not hold that person accountable. It does not mean that we don't, as a community, try to understand, like, what our priorities are together. Because ultimately, I think the way to make sure that the establishment is reflecting the will of the people is to do this deep organizing that Mamie used to do, right? It really is to go, like, door to door. It really is to know your neighbors. It really is to go to city council meetings, right? And that's the most important thing. Regardless of who's in office, like, the accountability still has to be there. And so, yes, representation, and also accountability, and also community organizing.
I think that's a great response, because it is difficult. I feel often pulled in both directions as far as wanting people to be, Chicanas to be in positions of power in order to create more equitable structures. But then we also assume that a Chicana will make those decisions inherently, or like there's sort of a naturalized idea there that, as we're saying, isn't always true. That's why accountability is a necessity for when people are in these positions, which I think a lot of times is what Mamie and CJ are doing. They're trying to hold different institutions and themselves accountable to their community. I was also thinking too about the two organizations that you brought our attention to, Sophia, the Mutual Aid Foundation, SMOM, and also LULAC. And I think both of these community-centered institutions, or we call them organizations, have really fantastic intentions for their community. And they've actually like materially gained resources like education rights, like different kinds of voting rights within the different neighborhoods in Houston and in LA as well. But thinking specifically about Houston, I think that it's super, super easy to criticize like these organizations. And I often see this meme come across my For You page that the revolution won't be stamped with a 501c3, right? So basically like a nonprofit won't create a whole lot of change. And while I think like structurally that is true, and I find a lot of truth in that, I think that sometimes when we only see that perspective, we lose the really on the ground nuanced work that people like Mamie were doing. She was showing up with these mutual aid, with this mutual aid foundation. She was showing up in LULAC, as Gabby said, at people's door, at elderly people's houses, getting them out into the community, getting them to take part in different physical, social sort of events, and making sure that people had groceries, things that she could only do because she was elected to LULAC, because she was a part of this community service center, which is not to say people aren't doing that who have these organizations, but because she had them, she was able to advocate for her community in a way that's very visible, at least institutionally. It becomes quite invisible in a lot of different ways.
I also, when you were saying the groceries thing, Sonia, real quick, it just reminded me of the fact that a lot of people stayed afloat during the pandemic because of their neighbors, because, you know, of this mutual aid that comes like very organically from people who care about each other. And I think that that's really important because, you know, the question of discrimination comes up a lot in the idea of like an organizational structure or an institution. If like an organization is made out of a community, there are like deeper ties there than just an institutional or bureaucratic link. And so I think that a way to fight this discrimination, for example, is to find mutual aid with people who know you as a person and not just as a name or a form or a race, for example.
For sure. And I think that both Mamie and CJ are super aware of, you know, the sort of responsibilities and accountability that being visible, being out there and like knocking on people's doors, as we've been saying, what like all of the amount of criticism and the amount of, you know, the spotlight where people feel, you know, justified to a certain extent to say, to make comments about you, right? To judge you or whatever. Yes.
I was just thinking too, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was remembering when we went to the LULAC meeting, and we got to see a woman president take a position, Rachel Ceballos, right? And it felt really intimate. Like, it wasn't like we were at some institutional board meeting where Robert's Rules of Order, I mean, they did use Robert's Rules of Order, but it was like, it just felt super close and local. And I remember there were moments where they would say a neighbor's name, and that they were in the hospital and that they needed funds to get through some of their medical bills. So at the same time that we were like, well, this is like this, you know, connection to the police department, is something that we're struggling with as we're about to launch into soon. The other moments we were like, wow, this is incredibly, this is, as we're saying, like neighborly and local and very like centered on the Houston community that they know.
Super intimate. And I think that that level of intimacy also like requires an intimate knowledge about the needs and the, yeah, I don't know, the needs of the community, right? I mean, at some point during our interview with Mamie and CJ, CJ points out how, you know, we need to learn these strategies, not just of community building, but also of working within institutions, because she said, you know, discrimination is never going to end.
Here we are. It takes years to get us to a position, and only does one thing that throw us all the way back, yeah. And we're right back. If you look about it, like Mamie, back in the 80s when we were having all these civil rights issues against Latinos, and she worked for 25 years to turn that around within the Houston Police Department. And the minute she leaves that position, she retires. And guess what? Here we are in the 20th century, and we're right back to that same situation. Yeah. We're dealing with discrimination against the Black and brown community. Yeah. We're starting all over again.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
It is.
It's like a cycle.
Huh? Like a cycle. But because, you know, people get, I think, get comfortable, and they think we don't need it no more.
This is why we're deconstructing basically the establishment, right? So I guess with that said, let's get into Mamie's work with HPD. Participation is at the very root of Mamie's activism and the reason why she chose to work towards reforming HPD. The case of Jose Campos Torres was a triggering point for Mamie in her involvement with LULAC, but also in her involvement with the community at large. Campos Torres was allegedly intoxicated and inciting violence.
This was in 1977.
When the police arrived, six officers beat up Campos Torres, allegedly for resisting arrest, and they threw his unconscious body, handcuffed, into Buffalo Bayou, where he eventually drowned. Campos Torres was only the latest in a series of murders at the hand of HPD officers, mostly involving people of color. So Mamie decides to get involved. She's, you know, seeing all this violence towards her community. So she organizes a rally at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, another site that we've mentioned before in our podcast, to benefit the families of the deceased as a way to highlight this kind of systemic problem. And Mamie says,
I said, I want to have a rally at Guadalupe Church and invite all these people, the family of these persons that have been deceased at the hands of the police department. Okay. We called one radio station, and boom. And then we called the Houston Chronicle so they could put it on the newspaper. And it went nationwide. I had cameras from all over. It makes me sad. Because can you imagine, I have grandsons, and I cannot think how bad Mrs. Torres felt that day. Mm-hmm. I felt for her. I still do. It was the most biggest rally you ever seen. You could not come down Navigation Street. Mm-hmm. You could not come down Jensen, or you could not come down Navigation. You could. It was packed. You're not gonna believe it. People all the way down, almost down Ronald Street near Clayton Homes. Wow. And media was just bombarding me. Why did you say what led you to this? And who helped you? And who else did you call? I said the Justice Department. That's the way I did it. And so everybody said, this lady was, her son was killed. They gave her the med. Everybody had an opportunity to say what they had to say. Mm-hmm. Me, I wanted it to stop. I wanted the homicides to stop. Mm-hmm. Okay? That was my purpose. Mm-hmm. And I wanted justice. And I was speaking to my friend. He's still alive. Arnold Arevalo. And I was telling him, you know, we need to find out what's going on in the police department. We need to go and have a meeting with the chief.
So despite her quick response and Senora instincts to contact the people in charge, HPD was not really interested in meeting with Mamie. As CJ tells us, it took almost a year until the riots for Caldwell to accept a meeting with Mamie. After Campos Torres, the community essentially barred the police from coming into Magnolia. Yet at the Cinco de Mayo celebration, police showed up and the people reacted. Changes to the establishment were not implemented fast enough, but the demonstration kind of accelerated this process as Harry Caldwell, chief of police in 1978, finally accepted a meeting with Mamie. At this point, Mamie drafts a proposal and presents it to both Caldwell and the Justice Department. It's a radical proposal that basically revises the authority of police officers within racialized neighborhoods, especially since the basis of her plan involved bringing police officers into the barrios in order to allow people to know each other and build a relationship of trust through the creation of what she called substations, or really storefronts, places where officers had a set rotation and, you know, were able to build a certain rapport with the community, a certain accountability, which is what we've been talking about. In addition to these highly visible storefronts, Mamie advocated for the increase in Hispanic police officers to sort of ameliorate this kind of language barrier that was happening between officers and the community, as well as to acknowledge some of the racial bias that officers exhibited. Mamie shared that, you know, people, besides not trusting the police were not sympathetic enough for people. They treated them just, you know, as a victim of a regular old crime instead of really working with them and hearing their grievances. So Mamie eventually proposes a position called the community liaison, which is essentially a middle person between HPD and the community. The position begins in Magnolia, and it was implemented in police departments all across the country, essentially. She establishes also the award for Hispanic Officer of the Year, or OI, which is still in place to this day. But it's not about simply giving out or giving away this recognition to police officers just for showing up and doing the work, right? She also implemented this system, basically trading cards, like Pokemon cards, right? Featuring different HPD officers, or like baseball cards, I guess. like other kinds of trading cards, these would include some facts, some statistics, some, you know, information about the kinds of community service that was being performed by each officer. So, you know, she made the point that police officers need to basically earn their place in the community as opposed to just showing up and, you know, relying on their authority. One of the most striking examples of how Mamie's plan revises the role of police is through the establishment of the Comida Drive in 1985. We've sort of mentioned it. So it involved Fiesta Stores, a local chain of grocery stores, as well as HPD, even Pepsi, and a couple of different churches from the region. People were essentially encouraged to buy 2 days' worth of food for a family of four. When Sonia noticed the resemblance of this kind of mutual aid work with social work, Mamie suggested that this is how police systems should work.
They're supposed to be social workers all the time.
She insists that the first step in changing the police system is to break down the barriers that make it feel like police officers are outside of the communities they serve. She emphasizes that they are first and foremost community members, or they should be. Mamie's proposal had concrete results, yet there's something about this post-2020 moment that feels like a similar kind of watershed moment, just as José Campos Torres's murder caused a complete breach of trust in the police. The more recent murders of George Floyd, Trayvon Martin, and even Vanessa Guillen have shaken up how Black and Brown communities interact, or not, with the police. So, big topic, big conversation, but could we discuss out loud, I guess, how these two historical moments might be similar to each other, and how Mamie's strategies of door knocking and community engagement would look like today?
I mean, I think that in any kind of civil rights activist movement, activist moment, like all the time you're learning from your predecessors. doing community organization around police violence is so difficult. In some ways, it's very easy. In some ways, it's very difficult, right? I think that people who are affected understand the stakes because they are affected by the stakes, right? It's not like you have to convince people who are affected that they're being affected for the most part. I think when you look at community organizing around this issue in certain communities, kind of the barrier to activation can be fear. And what I think was so extraordinary in 2020 was that a lot of people felt that fear and channeled it into action, because there's a certain tipping point at which you can no longer like live in fear and accept what's happening to you. And you see that with Campos Torres. You saw that in the Chicano movement. You see that, in Mexico, in marches against feminicides in 2019, 2016, 2020, even now, you see it around the world on Women's Day, right? And I think that is something that can be manifested in the streets, right? And that can be very powerful. But I think community engagement looks very similar as it did back then, in that you go door to door to your neighbors, you talk to them, you build a community, a network of trust in order to tangibly change things. So protesting is a very small part, actually, of like real activism. Like a very large part is mutual aid. A very large part is like knowing your rights as a tenant, for example. A very large part is changing policy so that certain minority groups aren't prohibited from buying land or from like renting in certain other areas of the city. That still happens to this day. It's like de facto segregation. So I think that thing, that injustices like the Campos Torres murder, like the murder of so many Black people at the hands of police, including George Floyd, I think these things shouldn't have to happen. I think these things are just tragedies, period. I also know that there is a large swath of people who are unaffected by these day-to-day injustices, who saw that public murder, who saw the injustice that was happening, who saw people of color going out to the streets and said, oh, something's happening here. And so, like Campos Torres, what happened is that, the whole community of Houston, in a way, had to get involved, even though it was, quote unquote, just a Mexican or Mexican-American issue at the time. Like, it became more than that because of public unrest. And so I think that the same thing happens when we see murders at the hands of police, continuous murders that still happen to this day, is that you can't ignore it. Like, people attempt to ignore it, but this kind of violence has a way of surfacing over and over and over again in public memory, in the streets, in the way that the police interact with people, in the way that news talks about minorities, right? It comes up over and over and over again, and it can't be erased. And so these points of horror and terror and tragedy are points at which people who are not affected on a day-to-day basis are confronted with like the violence that is very real and actually depends a lot on them as well.
Yeah, I had to take a second to I had to take a second to like really process all of the things. Building off like Gabby's last point, my big takeaway from the Campos Torres homicide was the unbridled power of police, which is basically what we're still dealing with. It was so bad that even the most conservative Houstonians became involved and participated, to use like Mamie's term, right, in the protest, in trying to hold police accountable for this unjust murder. And they weren't. Like, that's the tragic part, is that justice was not given. It was not even pursued, really. So I think what Mamie attempts to do with her institutional proximity to HPD is to bridle that power, right? To put parameters and structures in place to attempt to stop what was happening at that time and what kept happening. That was not the first incident of it happening. It was just a tipping point for this particular local community. I think that the substations was really interesting when she brought it up, because a part of her señora power was that police were not being allowed into the neighborhoods. Like, she emphasized how much the police needed her because they couldn't go in. They couldn't do any policing. They couldn't do any arrests. They couldn't do any investigations. Nobody would talk to them. Nobody would allow them in. It was a complete shutout. And they needed Mamie as a community liaison. She invented the position, but they needed her. And that's why Caldwell took that meeting with her, the chief of police. It's like, I think it's important to like linger with that for a second. This person who really actually is in a position of power as the chief of police in the 1970s sat down with Mamie Garcia to ask her, how do we fix this? How do we move forward from here? So that's like clear señora power. I think like where it gets super frustrating is like this idea that the more Hispanic people we have in as officers will lead to less brutality or less unbridled power. It's frustrating, especially like thinking about like Trayvon Martin, for example. He was murdered by George Zimmerman, who is, I think, of Afro-Peruvian descent. Like, it's really important to remember, as we were talking about earlier, that representation is not the end goal here. And I do think that Mamie's, even though a lot of what she's doing is about representation, there's actually a little bit, there's more than that. It's more textured than that. It's more nuanced than that. Because she believes police officers are social workers all the time. She is basically advocating for police reform. She's not advocating, this might be conservative to some of our listeners, because she's not advocating for the abolition of police, but she's advocating for police reform. And in thinking of police officers as social workers, as community members, so people who are already invested in the community, who are familiar with what is happening, who speak the language, whether that's Spanish or literally just the local sort of like conversations and linguistics that are happening. I don't know. I don't have a concluding thought except that in a lot of ways, I remember when we were studying the Campos Torres and the Moody Park riots and feeling so sad, so frustrated at the cyclical nature. And then I remember, I feel that in a lot of ways, Mamie's active participation, even if we don't agree with all of the methods that she's using, is an antidote to that cyclical hopelessness. Because what she's basically saying is like, don't give up. Just keep going, keep knocking on doors, keep thinking of alternative pathways, because there's literally no other option.
So, okay, well, we've been talking a lot about a specific kind of establishment, the police. We all, it's a, you know, big topic. Lots of feelings and emotions go into this topic. But, you know, it's not the only thing that Mamie did. As we said, she was also affiliated with LULAC. As we said, CJ is currently president and CEO, I believe, of the Sociedad Mutualista Obrera Mexicana. Mamie's still a board member in this mutual aid organization, which we've already said does great work for the community. They organize food drives, they organize community events, they organize after-school classes, all sorts of things. And even though both CJ and Mamie are affiliated with so many organizations and institutions, the main thing that they're both adamant in is sharing the skills and sharing the knowledge that we need for the rest of the community to get involved in concrete ways. You're never just a little person like knocking on people's doors, or like you're never just like a little person going about your work. You're a skill set and you have knowledge, and you can also, you know, get people, convince people to participate along with you. So That's your daily dose of Señora Power for today. Keep coming back for more. Go knock on your neighbor's door and be careful about it.